to play in the Super Bowl against the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Vernon hands the Lynch left side. Finds a little bit of a hole. Keeps his leg moving. He's across the 40. Midfield. 45. He's on the run, Lynch. 40. Pushes him at 35. Look at him go. He's down to 20. 15. He could go. He is going to go. Touchdown, Seahawks. Oh, my word. A 67-yard run. Marshawn Lynch. Unbelievable. The beast is alive and well.
Wide receivers to either side. Russell takes the snap. He drops back.
To the middle. It's intercepted. Going the other way. He's out across the 30, the 40, midfield, down the far sideline. Is he going to outrun everybody? He is. It's Bobby Wagner from the goal line. 99 yards. He lays down in the end zone. Somebody bring him oxygen.
It has been decided maybe since the safety in the first quarter. 12, they're bringing the trophy home. Your Seahawks Super Bowl 48 champion.
Ladies and gentlemen, Seahawks and football fans everywhere, a very warm welcome back to the We Talk Seahawks podcast. I hope you're all doing well. I'm doing well because the Seahawks are 2-1, 37-27 over the Carolina Panthers. We didn't make it easy. When do we ever? My fellow lovely and well-respected co-host conveniently forgot during the week building up that, you know, we were going to beat the Panthers by 20. We were going to blow them up by 20 plus, weren't we, Mr. Pietro Baron? But then he conveniently forgot that we were the Seahawks, and I can count on one hand the amount of times we've blown teams out 20 plus points in my tenure as a fan. So of course it was a closely fought win with a little bit of squeaky bum time up until the last quarter of football. But in the end, the scoreline reads like a fairly comfortable 10-point win. But in actual fact, we all know it was a little bit closer than what the scoreline maybe suggests. But another good offensive showing. You frowned, but okay, we'll get into it. It's another very good offensive showing. Some good defensive plays and players sort of showing their worth and showing their ability again. Especially a certain cornerback that we'll get onto. But before we get into any of that, I have to, as always, introduce my fellow co-host. So, Mr. Positive Pez, I've heard rumours that for some reason, you're not entirely positive tonight. Maybe aside from one player, but how are you?
I'm all right. I'm tired.
He's tired? Listen to that, listeners. That's the first time I've ever asked Pez, how are you? And he's gone, I'm all right, instead of, oh, yeah, I'm good. Every single pod we've ever done in the history of We Talk Seahawks, Pez's first line is, yeah, I'm good, mate. This one, I'm all right. I'm all right. So something's off. Something's amiss.
Yeah. I just disagree with your assessment of the game. That's it. Like, just solely my stress levels watching the game. Mm-hmm. If I'm uneasy watching the game, that to me tells me it was closer, regardless of what the score is, it was closer than what it might look or like. But this Panthers game, I was not worried one single bit. Not really? A single bit. Nope. The way they were playing, almost like when we talked in the Rams game about adjustments, and like Mitch said, we just didn't adjust. The first half, I don't know. I was chilled. Like, I just knew. I knew they were going to come out, they were going to adjust, and they were just going to take over the game. 25-7 in the second half. Mm-hmm. That's what the score was. That's the dominant second half. That is a really good adjustment change. That stadium was the loudest I've heard it in many years.
It was.
Like, I had to put it down a couple more notches on my telly from where I normally have it, because there was that much noise coming out of my telly at level 8. I had to knock it down to 6 just so I didn't wake my wife up. I think I woke up anyway. But, yeah, I disagree with you. I don't think it was close at all. I think it was actually more comfortable. Like, it might not have looked it because we kept giving up these deep balls and stuff like that, but at the end of the day, we missed four corners and we let up 44 yards total rushing, I think it was something like that, if I've ever got my facts right. I take getting caught up deep with Mike Jack and Artie Burns and not let a single breakout run happen. Because the thing is, we've got Tariq coming back. Trey Brown will be coming back because I think it was just a stinger. He should be good to go. Kobe should be back this week. Jamal's back. If we can stop the run the way we're doing it right now and then we get all them back, I'm not concerned. So that's why I don't think the game was as close as like how you think it was by what you said. I just don't think it was. Like, we got cut deep, yeah, fair enough. It happened, but we were missing our main secondary weapons. And all I give a shit about this early in the season is, can we stop the run? Mm-hmm. Because as we've seen with many Pete Carroll teams, the adjustments normally come halfway to the back end of the season. Now, if we can stop the run as good as we're doing right now,
it's a good platform to build from. Yeah.
How good can we truly be by the end of the season?
Yeah.
We are, just to get out of how you're doing, Pez segment, we've not even started the pod yet, is we are people who are like, oh, yeah, but we're getting gashed in this and the other. Just take a breather, get outside the box of the game, look at the bigger picture. We probably are in the best position we've been in years as a starting block. I'm bullish on that. Really am.
You're more
than... How are you, Mitch?
How are you, Mitch?
I'm just over here listening to it. I find myself agreeing with quite a lot of what you're saying there, Pez, which is filling me with hope for the pod, to be honest, because we're going to have a lot of agreement, I think, on some of these. But, I'm good. I'm very good. And very pleased to see us 2-1. I think we've got a great shot at going 3-1 before the bye week. Really excited to see Witherspoon on one side, Reek on the other, Jamal Adams, prowling in between them. I think that's incredibly exciting for Seahawks fans. I'm in a really good spot. I'm really enthused. I feel like the Rams game was a bit of an outlier. We came out cold. We weren't sort of on it. I think that's kind of behind us now. Two wins on the trot. Senior players in leadership roles in that team are leading by example. Our senior receivers, our quarterback, our middle linebackers, our oldest defensive linemen, they're all out there. Austin as well, our center. So, name always troubles me. Center's
Evan
name?
Brown.
Evan Brown. I'm losing my mind.
Thinking of Austin Blythe from last season.
Yeah, I'm thinking of Austin Blythe from last year. There you go. Yeah. But like the leadership, the players in leadership positions are really, really stepping forward now, and I really feel like the youth in our roster, which is rich, it's rich with young talent, are following. And also something we mentioned right back in preseason, me and Pez and yourself, James, we were really high on the amount of depth throughout the roster when other teams were cycling through in preseason and putting out their third choice players. Our depth was going toe-to-toe with them and beating them late in games. Those players have been relied on early in our season, on our offensive line, on our defensive line, in our secondary, and they're all making plays and we're winning games. So I feel like we're in a great spot with this roster. And like Pez was saying, the run D has created a fantastic platform for us to push on from with our defensive scheme this year.
I'm good. I'm glad you're good. I totally agree. I totally agree with everything you said there. As always, with these game review pods, we normally begin with the offense, and that is what we're going to do tonight. That's where we're going to start. Geno Smith, 23 for 36, 296 yards, one touchdown, and his first interception of the season, which was a bit of an ugly one. A bit of a trying to force the ball into a window that wasn't there, trying to get a little bit desperate at the time in the game, and he made the mistake. That's fair enough. It's his first one of the season. We can give him that. It didn't cost us the game, so that's fair enough. Sort of pivoting back to my initial kind of opening statement that you kind of disagreed with Pez, in terms of it not being as comfortable, and I was a bit nervous. I was certainly at halftime, I was nervous because Jason Myers had kicked a ridiculous, I mean, how many fucking field goals was it at that point?
Four.
So we kept the, and I was getting not concerned, but just frustrated that we kept getting down to the red zone and our red zone offense was horrendous. We just got down there and ran out of ideas seemingly and didn't know how to work our red zone offense. So traditionally in the NFL, and I think if this was against a better team than the Panthers, if you getting down to the red zone and kicking field goals is what you get out of it, you pretty much most of the time going to lose games doing that. So I think if we were playing against a better Panthers offense and a better team than the Panthers in general, we may well have been made to pay for those five field goals that we ended up kicking. So I think we got away with one slightly in that regard. You don't normally kick that many field goals in a game and win, in my opinion. So that's why I was a little bit concerned. But second half, they turned it on. Gino kind of gathered, like you say, that leadership role, sorted himself out. The offense started to click a bit better and it worked. And we got the points when we needed to. Certainly helped by the fantastic display of Mr. Ken Walker. 18 carries.
Are you jumping onto Ken straight away?
I am jumping on to Ken straight away.
Feel like you're stealing my thunder.
No, I'm coming straight to you, Pez. You've told me this is your only source of positivity this week, so I'm coming straight to you, Ken. 18 carries, 97 yards for 5.4 yards of average per carry and two touchdowns on the ground with an extra three receptions for 59 yards and a 19.7 average per reception. So I think in all, that was about 156 yards of total offense. He won NFC Player of the Week, Offensive Player of the Week. And that is why I brought Ken up there, because I thought his performance massively helped out Gino in that second half. They started working in tandem beautifully, mixing up the run and the pass. So I think it came as a pair in that second half. So that's why I brought him up then. So I'll come straight to you, Pez, because I know how positive you are about Ken. But this was a bit of an outstanding performance from him, wasn't it, really, to put it bluntly?
Yeah. I just want to go back to something you said about the five field goals and it concerned you against a better team. How I saw it was, kind of ties into Ken, was Ken didn't get going in the first half. It's something I'll give my 2 pence on in a bit. I just mentioned that he couldn't get going straight away. Panthers D was quite good. Run D was quite good. And we wanted to emphasise running the ball, like, you know, just standard yep. Seahawks or Pete Ball, whatever word you want to use for it. But realistically, against a better team, can you name a single team who is great at run blocking and pass defense? I don't think there's a unit at the moment. Maybe the Browns are showing that they could potentially be that unit, but it doesn't concern me too much because at this moment in time, it seems like a team's really good at run D and kind of lets up on the pass. So I just wanted to have like a comment on that, but back to Ken, like, he's just what I say he is. He is what he is on the tin. In preseason, all these people who are like, Charbonnet's going to take his role, Charbonnet's going to take his job. No, he isn't. Do you know what's perfect? I had listened to a podcast, and do you know what they're doing? Is what this podcast said. Charbonnet is really good. We got a glimpse this game of if they two stay healthy at the back end of the year, what we are going to see in our run game, and it is going to be devastating for teams. Like they are going to be like the next duo of Alvin Kamara and Ingram.
Mark Ingram, yeah.
Yeah, Mark Ingram. Them two, when they were together and they were unstoppable. because these two looked unstoppable together. But essentially, Charbonnet is kind of like insurance policy. Ken stays elite. We don't need to pay Ken because we've got a year extra on Charbonnet. We don't need to, like just the league doesn't want to pay running backs. That's my two pence on why I think they actually picked Charbonnet up as a kind of big picture. If Ken stays elite, do we really need to pay him because we've got Charbonnet, who's probably going to be just as elite? But back to Ken, he is just sensational. Like I said it all off season. People who started panicking, people who were like, oh, bring fantasy in. It's like, oh, you can't draft Ken Walker because of Charbonnet. No. Ken Walker is elite. Ken Walker is, when it's all said and done at the end of this year, I am bullish on saying it, he will, doing what he's done in the first three games, he will be a top five running back. He's unstoppable. And he's only getting started. And that is, like, I don't know what else, like, any more superlatives I can say about that lad. He catches passes. And did you see him on the sideline going, chucking it about, catching them passes, chucking the celebrations about? That's like, oh, yeah, I can pass. I put it on Twitter. I said, oh, but Ken can't catch passes. That's interesting. Probably got the most likes that day by people because it's hilarious. It's fucking hilarious that, oh, he's not a pass-catching running back. He's going to be an unstoppable running back. Like, he's just fucking incredible. And to bring some love to Charbonnet, what we got a glimpse of by them two, don't get me wrong, Charbonnet showed his capabilities. Still think I am right in saying that, well, it's not a bad thing, but by the back end of the year, you're going to see the confidence. I still, like, that game's really going to help him. But I still look at him sometimes and think, just watch Ken's tape. And when you see a big ball of players together fighting each other, don't try and fucking wiggle your way into a hole. Like, you had acres of room to your right, bounce out, go. Them kind of little things are like kind of like the bit, you know, rookie nervousness, like don't want to fuck up kind of thing. Whereas Ken never seemed to have that issue. He just kind of like, I'm just going to do what the fuck I want. But this game, like, if that's a confidence builder Charbonnet needs, I feel sorry for the Giants this week. I honestly, I think them two could probably go 100 yards together, like each. I think they've got to just destroy them. Like, perfect. Me and Mitch said it on our chat. Literally, Pete Carroll listens to this podcast. We literally laid it out exactly how it was. Ken wasn't getting going. And then Charbonnet came in. For my fantasy team, I was like, get fucking Charbonnet off this fucking field now. And then he came back for the points. But exactly what we said. Boom, 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 Ken to finish. What's quite interesting, because everyone thought that it would be Ken, Charbonnet to finish. But that shows to me that Ken is the true number one. Because Ken wasn't going, so it's like, right, Charbonnet, you do the donkey work. Ken, red zone, you're going to go and get it. Amazing. Honestly, amazing.
Yeah, it was... It was pretty special, just getting better week in, week out. And I love his attitude as well, Ken. He's such a nice, humble guy. But when he's on the field, he just turns into a beast. And yeah, like I say, I'm really happy with Charbonnet, really happy for him. That angry run, that one angry run of the week was just...
Sensational.
It's just unbelievable. What I was just sat there, just obviously hyped as it happens, but then as they show the review, I was just pissing myself because the poor lad. Fuck it. They're not going to be able to tell. Just fucking hit him.
Yeah. Do you know what? If he probably had more concentration on not trying to take that guy's soul out of the stadium, he may have been able to cut in and actually get a touchdown.
He's probably. I love it. It's a real one-two punch in all senses of the word. They are smacking guys in the mouth, and people can't seem to stop them at the minute. So I'm fully in your camp there, Pez. I think Charbonnet is gonna come good towards the back end of the season, once his confidence is up. Mitch, I know I touched on Gino there as well. What did you make of Gino, and then in that second half, sort of leaned on the run game a bit more to get the offense sort of kick-started and jump-started a little bit into the game?
Yeah, I really enjoyed both halves for different reasons. I think we lacked the tip on the end of the spear in the first half in terms of red zone potency, which we corrected in the second half by making sure that Ken was fresh for the end of the drive, so that we had a bit more juice in the tank when handing the ball off to Ken when we were, you know, really in the red zone. I think that worked really well. There's a few things I want to say later, a bit later on in the pod about Gino and the way that our offense is starting to look, and some of the warts that are arriving, and some of the really good stuff that's coming out of our current situation with our offensive line. But I think everything that we talk about in terms of a negative, and anything we talk about in terms of a positive at the moment with our offense, we do have to factor in that offensive line is incredibly depleted, and anything they're doing with it that is good, we really do have to factor in that. You know, with a proper offense, full force offensive line, these things were going to be even better. And we'll be less restricted in what looks we put out there, because we won't have to play so many tight ends so often. But there's a few really interesting stats that have come out of the game, and I'm probably going to dip into a bit of that later. In terms of going into the running back stuff, like Pez says, we said earlier on, I think after either right, it was post-draft, was it, Pez, when we said about the way we saw... And I can't remember, James, whether you dipped into that conversation or not. I can't remember. But I remember having a bit of a back and forth with Pez on it. And we basically said that we expected Charbonnet to pick up some of the workhorse reps in the middle of the drive and give Ken the option to rip off big chunks early and then give him the ball back later in the drive with fresh legs to finish it off and score his touchdowns. We saw that last week, and we saw it this week. And it's no surprise to me that he's had four touchdowns in 2 weeks, and all of them came in the red... Maybe not strictly in the red zone, but certainly when we were within 25 to 30 yards of the end zone. So that's looking really good, that combination. And I think something that Pez might be quite interested in here, the snap count for the game, I think between the two running backs, Ken took about 53% of the snaps, and Charbonnet was on for about 40 odd, and then DJ Dallas in there a little bit as well. It was a very tight split between them, but we saw Ken early and Ken late, and we saw workhorse reps for Charbonnet in the middle of drives. And one of the best things we saw was after that big hit that Charbonnet laid out on I can't remember the fella's name, but you know, he's irrelevant, he's in the dirt now anyway. the really nice thing was that Ken was called on to finish off that run, and his immediate reaction was to say, no, leave Charbonnet out there, let him try and get a touchdown. And that's when we threw it to Jake Bobo, and Bobo got the touchdown. And Pete Carroll said afterwards, Ken was really keen for Charbonnet to be out there to cap off that drive after that big hit, but the ball went to Bobo, so it didn't matter. But that's brilliant, because it shows the two of them accepting that they have roles, they have a shared life within this offense without needing to be ultra competitive. They can be competitive and still encourage each other to be, you know, a unit. We saw that with Penny last year. Penny was really encouraging to Ken, didn't see him as a threat, saw him as a part of the same weapon. And now we're seeing Ken take Charbonnet in and try and succeed together. So I think all signs on the run game are brilliant.
Shouting each other out on Instagram and that, going, check my guy out. And you know Charbonnet is buzzing, because every day he has reposted his video, like he is like he's watching that thing every day, just like the rest of us. Just a quick one on Gino. I was just going through my like screenshot stats I saw through Twitter and Instagram. When targeting DK this season, what's quite interesting, because last year it was a bit up and down, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
He's 15 for 19, 78.9%, 234 yards. That's 12.3 yards per average pass. One touchdown, no interceptions, 130 5.6 passer rating.
That's
135.6.
So I think that really bodes into what you were saying last week, Mitch, do you know, about how DK has improved so much that he's complementing Geno's perfect passing style by not be like, you know, by being crisper on his routes, doing his breaks and stuff. So yeah, it's really I just wanted to chuck that one in before we transitioned away from
because it was great time, because I was going to transition onto DK, because you see it, you read his stat line, 6 receptions for 112 yards with an 18.7 average per catch. And I was looking at it and I'm going, it's an unbelievable stat line. And yet coming out of that game, no one's talking about DK Metcalf's performance. And it was one of those performances where, like, he's got 112 yards, but it was like, not saying he didn't get it, but it's like it didn't feel like he had it, because it was all like the Ken show and sort of the Charbonnet show. It was all about the running game, and it was like people are just forgetting that DK has just casually put up 112 yards on 6 receptions. Like, the guy is, I dare to say it, but is he really becoming our wide receiver one over like a Tyler Lockett now? Is Tyler Lockett starting to take a bit more of a, not bench role, obviously, but a bit more of a backseat role, maybe coming towards the end of his contract? Are they thinking, we've got to get DK as the locked-in wide receiver one?
Do you know, just jumping in quickly, do you know how I feel what they're doing? Is if you remember way, 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 way back when we were Super Bowls, we were contenders. They did this with Doug Baldwin a lot. They did this with Doug Baldwin a lot. They did it with Jermaine Kearse a lot. And people forget these little intricacies through the season because they only remember the playoffs and the Super Bowl and stuff. But there were seasons where Doug might have been injured at the start of the year and you wouldn't see anything till the back end of the year. And I honestly feel like they're just thinking DK can take the workload. Don't forget, Tyler did have a questionable tag going into this game, if I'm rightly saying. Yep. So I just think he did take a backseat, and they're looking at it like they're doing a bit of their old school stuff where they'll put Tyler on the back burner, make sure he's good for the back end of the year. And they used to do this kind of thing all the time back in the day when we were like contending and we were like in the mix all the time. They do this weird rotation, what I noticed with their wide receivers, where you'd see loads to one guy and you're like, well, where's the other guy? And then back end of the year, he'd like blow up out of nowhere, just in perfect timing and stuff. Like, so I feel like it's doing that kind of thing again.
Yeah. I see it as a bit like, you know how the Eagles have like Devonta Smith and AJ Brown? Like, it feels like one week Devonta Smith goes off for a ridiculous game and AJ Brown is kind of curtailed a bit. And then like you saw against the Buccaneers this week, Devonta Smith didn't do much. I can't remember what AJ Brown did. But they just sort of have games where one guy goes off. And we've seen it with DK and Lockett, where Lockett goes off and like he had that touchdown catch performance last week. And then this week he's not really involved in the game at all. And yet DK has a monster game. So it just feels like they're both too talented not to be. Like, we've always kind of said, it's wide receiver one, sort of wide receiver, like A, wide receiver one, B kind of thing with Metcalf and Lockett. So it was just an interesting sort of suggestion to feel out there as to whether sort of are there is something more sinister going on in terms of Tyler Lockett's future and stuff like that. But I don't think it's that just yet. But what I do want to... Yes?
I was just about to say, but I think you're going to transition to him anyway. I don't think it is sinister at all, because the shell of wide receiver 3 we have at the moment deems it not to be sinister, because if it was sinister, then I'm guessing the person you're about to go on to would be a lot heavier involved.
Well, I am going to go on to Jaxon Smith-Njigba, because this is a really interesting talking point coming out of Seahawks fans at this moment in time. As we all did, and as we all know, Jaxon Smith-Njigba is elite. We all know that. And we all expected him to come out of college into Seattle straight away and just sort of burst onto the scene and take the bull by the horns and go for, you know, fit straight into the offense kind of thing. Is it because for me, there's two schools of thought at the minute that I'm seeing in the Seahawks world. One is that a kind of just Geno is either, whether it's Geno or the or Shane Waldron, isn't sure how to scheme into the offense yet, and it's going to take a bit more time, blah, 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 blah. Not necessarily that he's a bad player or anything like that. They just don't know how to use him yet, and Geno is more trustworthy in DK and Lockett at the minute. Or is Jaxon Smith-Njigba's, could you put his slow start down to the injuries on the offensive line in Charles Cross and Abraham Lucas, which then results in more two tight end sets being having to be used in terms of blocking and having to go to them, and therefore you can't get JSN on the field as much because we're having to use more 13 personnel, more two tight end sets, which we are indeed seeing. And shout out Noah Fant, by the way, I thought he was excellent against the Panthers, but that's by the by. So I'll go to both of you, because personally, I'm in the camp of that it's down to the tight end sets that we're running. And once Charles Cross and Lucas are back, then we'll see JSN potentially come into his own. So I'll hand it over to you.
I'll take this first if I can.
Sorry, I was just about to say, I view it differently. So okay. if you view it the same as James.
I'll go first just because I've got some stats for you.
Mitch is so
I've written a very small essay called The Seahawks Offense Identity Crisis, and then I've crossed out crisis and called it inconvenience. So this is my offense identity inconvenience, right? So Geno this year, 159 passer rating on intermediate throws. So throws to Tyler Lockett and DK have been extremely good. Running back one and two have been extremely influential late in games. Parkinson and Fant have been really good, and Will Disley has been the highest graded tight end by PFF through the first 2 weeks. Okay, so tight ends working well utilized, running backs working well utilized, intermediate throws from quarterback to two wide receivers on the perimeter, really good. What we're not talking about there is JSN. So the crisis is this: JSN's game, no deep ball action at all, and we can't work on third down. That's what's happened as a result of this. So JSN is doing a brilliant job getting more separation than everyone apart from one person in the league, but is not being targeted on first and second downs. If you don't target your slot receiver on first and second down, you don't target him on third. Now, JSN only saw the field when we weren't playing 12 and 13 personnel. So every time we put two extra tight ends on the field to help our tackles, JSN was one of the players that sat. The entire second half against the Panthers, we played 12 or 13 personnel. So 95% of JSN snaps in this game against the Panthers was in the first half. 95% of his snaps in this game were in the first half when our offense was not clicking, right? So we had him out there and we were trying deep balls to Tyler. Right, there were two deep balls where he had to play cornerback instead of wide receiver because we were throwing a ball too early because we couldn't set a pocket for Geno to sit in. So he was rushing a deep ball. Tyler was having to stop interceptions deep. So we didn't establish the run game in the first half. We couldn't establish the pocket without having the extra tight ends on. Second half worked well because we played 12 or 13 personnel, extra tight ends, enabled the run game to flourish at the expense of JSN. And all of that happens because you don't use JSN on early downs. If you start an offense at your offense and go 3 or 4 yard gain with Charbonnet or Ken, you've then got second and four, second and five. You then go to JSN early in the snap when he's got that early yard on his defender. You've got another 3 or 4. You've then got three and two, or you've got a first down if you manage to get yards after the catch from JSN, which is part of his speciality. As soon as you get to third and six, third and seven, you're not going for a quick, sharp throw to JSN because that's not your throw. You're then going to intermediate throws to tight ends, which means that JSN isn't on the field. And you're going to Tyler Lockett on out routes and things. So currently our offense, having to play 12 or 13 personnel to help our tackles, is at the expense of JSN. However, I don't currently believe that when we have our full strength offensive line back, we're going to be going to him early on, you know, first and second downs. But I think they're missing a trick. That's our current identity crisis. That's how JSN is being underutilized. That's why we're struggling on third downs, because we're trying too much on second down and not going for quick completions and allowing that yards after catch potential that JSN has to get us a first down, not just make up some yards. And that is why the deep ball isn't happening, because instead we're going to intermediate throws because we're not protecting Geno long enough to get the deep ball. So we're going with the intermediate stuff. That's why he's got a great passer rating on those, because he's having to take underneath routes and breaks out of what look like go routes for deep balls, and they're breaking out and getting a 20, 30 yard instead of a 40, 50.
Okay.
That's my take.
It's a very, very well written essay. I'm going to mark you down a little bit for lack of references. But other than that, it's a very well worded essay. Pez, before Mitch sort of embarked on his essay, you suggested that you had a different view. After listening to Mitch's essay, have you still got a different view, or have you been swayed?
He makes very good points. That's why I love Mitch on the pod, because he comes from an analytical, statistical side, whereas I just kind of watch and get a feel of what I look at. And I built a picture from the interception, what was targeted to JSN, and then that video that came out where JSN looked dejected on the sideline. They made it out to be he was dejected because of the interception. I don't think it is. I honestly think he's dejected because where he was and where he got picked, if he had the ball targeted in his path, he was gone. He was prepared to take the ball in stride and go. Now, my concern is all this hype about JSN in the preseason. We always have that guy, don't we? Cody Thompson, looking Russ's best mate, who's not there anymore. Penny Hart, all them people are like, oh my God, he's doing this, that, and the other. I really am concerned that JSN, a part of me, I don't think it is true, but a part of me is really worried that JSN is that preseason sweetheart that they don't know what to do with him. And this whole Geno to JSN connection is 1 out of 10. They've snippeted it and gone, look at that connection. That's amazing. Because that interception pass, I put solely on Geno. But they make it out like Geno goes over to him and goes, yeah, yeah, come on, come on, come on, like it was JSN's fault. I watched it back so many times to see if I'm like just double dutch whilst I was half asleep watching the game. But to me, it was, I think he's genuinely pissed, because I don't think Geno fully, like, for all the hype in the preseason, I don't think Geno actually has that good of a connection with him yet. I think if you put Drew Lock on the field, I think you'd see JSN. I think JSN played so well in the preseason because it was Drew Lock. I'm starting to get that opinion of the situation. I think it's a Geno thing. And even though Waldron shouldn't have an issue scheming JSN into the game, my biggest issue is we've seen it multiple times with these kinds of talents. I know we have DK and we haven't done that, but I really am worried that Pete Carroll doesn't know how to use a player like JSN. He has so much influence in this team. Let's not, just because we're winning, let's not forget he has a big say on play calling on defense and play calling on offense. And I'm really worried that he will struggle to get the full potential out of a JSN. Like, that's a concern of mine. With the caveat of, remember what I said? I can't remember what pod it was, but remember what I said? We were talking about this, and I said, kind of like contradict myself here, is I don't think we'll see JSN for the first 4 weeks. Do you remember me saying that? Because yeah. I don't think we're going to need him. Because I was bullish. I said we batter all these teams. Like the Rams, like we said, I reckon they were just like half asleep, believe the hype that they're just shit and they were just going to dummy him. But these four teams, they don't need JSN. They don't need his skill set. That Bengals game, after the bye week, I think they're going to have a real... They're not going to do it. Like, historically, looking at Pete Carroll and the way he does things, as fans, we get pissed. But he waits till a bye week. I genuinely have got confidence in saying that come that bye week, they're going to sit down, they're going to look at the tape, they're going to assess it and go, we really need to work on getting JSN into this game, because for the Bengals, we are going to need him. We're going to need three receivers. We're going to need Charbonnet. We're going to need Ken. We're going to need everyone. Like, fair enough, Burrow isn't doing that great at the moment. He's injured, so it does benefit us. But they're still a lethal team. Mm-hmm. And it will probably all end up being a shootout. And I will stick by my guns and say, no one needs to panic just yet. I think these first four games give the bye week. And I think after the bye week, you'll see a big second half for a three-quarter shift with JSN. But yeah, it's not looking good. Just a quick one. For Mitch, see what his opinion is if he remembers this play. You might not. It's a little thing I picked up on. We were in the red zone and JSN was in the slot. And because we were in the red zone, they sat off. So they basically filled the end zone, kind of left, you know, soft coverage essentially, left just behind the defensive line, wide open, filled the end zone to stop any like threats to the end zone. JSN was in the slot. I said to my mate when I was watching it, I said, if this isn't a JSN slant behind the D line, then I don't know what they're doing. Sets off, literally off the line. I'll try and find this play and put it in our chat. Off the line, just dummies his defender. Has a two-step advantage on him straight out of the block. And then he does a out route where there was another receiver in that same vicinity. The middle of the field, from my memory, was wide open. He'd already dummied his receiver off his defender off the line. Slant him in. Just... Like, I am not an X's and O's guy. I'm not technical like that. But I even saw that and I was like, that's his speciality. Why are you not doing that? Why are you kicking him on the outside?
If I recall the play as well, it wasn't like third and goal either, because I think that we would have got a fresh set of downs completing the pass as well. And I think that was what frustrated me, because there was a quick crossing route. I didn't know that it was JSN, but I think there was a crossing route there that we could have got the completion, got a fresh set of downs, and you know, it would have been
left hand side.
And we ended up kicking a field goal, didn't we? And taking three in the first half, if I recall the play.
No, but you're 100% right.
That's disappointing to me, but I think the biggest issue when he is on the field, obviously his production in this game was hampered massively by the fact that we set up in the second half to run the ball and play 12-13 personnel. It meant he wasn't even on the field. But if you look at the progressions that Geno makes, he doesn't go through JSN early in his progressions. And if you've got a player like JSN getting a yard on his defender with his movement off the line, he wants to be one of your first progressions, especially on first down and second down, because he gets a yard, he gets the pass. The pass is for three or four, a couple of yards after the catch. That's a great first down. You get 4 or 5 yards on a first down, you're happy. With upside, there's upside there if he beats his man and wriggles free. And likewise, what Pez said there, as a red zone threat, JSN should be one of the first progressions for Geno. He should be thinking, if Geno's progressions aren't always to JSN first, he's worthless. Because he'll get more space to make a reception close to the line than he will at any point. And the interception that was thrown JSN's direction, he'd already got all the way out wide on an out route, and then he goes to him. He should be giving it to him while he's on his way to the out route. Not wait, throw. All of JSN's upside and skill is getting open early in the play and then carrying it yards after the catch. If he's not your first progression, you are doing it wrong. He should be, has JSN beaten his man? If yes, are we first down, second down? Yeah, we're first down. Snap off five at least. Mm. Not what's Geno we're doing, what's Tyler doing? Oh, JSN's, he's already covered.
So would you say that's a Geno limitation?
I think it's an adjustment. I think it's an adjustment. I think you need to get in your mind that giving the ball to JSN on a shallow route doesn't mean you're throwing for 3 yards. JSN is going to carry it another 5 yards after the catch. And if you do that on first or second down, you start giving us easy third downs, easier second downs, the identity crisis with not getting the ball to JSN early, not being good on third downs, and not throwing the deep ball. All of that is fixed by establishing the run game and hitting JSN on early downs, because it condenses the defense, because they've got to start dealing with that. Then the deep ball's on. We failed those two deep balls we threw to Tyler in week three that were classed as drops because he was in the vicinity to catch it and didn't. He ended up having to bat the ball away, but were rushed deep balls that they were prepared for because we hadn't established the run game. How many drop catches did Tyler have last year? Two. How many has he had by week three because of rushed deep balls that weren't on? Two. People will look at his stats this year and say, oh, he's dropping more balls than last year. He's not. His stats throughout his career have been inflated. Well, not inflated. He's been brilliant at catching the deep balls and running those routes. But he's been catching those, and they've been giving him 100-yard games, 200-yard games against the Cardinals, multiple touchdowns, because we establish the run game and get the crossing routes done with the tight ends. And then once we've established it, we hit the deep balls. Those aren't happening currently because we're not using talents like JSN and establishing the run game early. That's an identity crisis. Well, not a crisis. I called it an identity inconvenience because we're still winning games. Despite all of this, there are only two teams in the NFL that have scored more points than us last 2 weeks. And one of them's the Dolphins. And the other one is, sorry, I've got my stats on the top here, the Bills. The Bills and the Dolphins have scored more points than us over the last 2 weeks. So it's working. We are just doing it in an arse backwards kind of way that is kind of costing JSN. But I do see that that is a symptom of bolstering our offensive line, which has beaten up. So I see both sides.
It's a fascinating early season discussion in terms of where JSN is and what school of thoughts are going around and where you all are in the camp. So it's very interesting to see what you guys think there. I'm going to transition to the defense. And as we always do with the defense, I booked the trend last week and I'm going to book the trend again in terms of working from the D-line back towards the secondary. I'm going to start in the secondary again. We just have to talk about him. And that's Devon Witherspoon. I know we're going to get into him on Rookie Watch as well, as we've done with JSN. But Devon Witherspoon, man. I mean, seriously, anyone still sort of wet in the bed over that flea flicker last week, just stop it, will you? Just stop it, will you? Because two little stats here, right? Firstly, courtesy of Greg Bell, no NFL defensive back is being targeted more per game than the Seahawks' Devon Witherspoon through his first two starts. And in those first two starts, he's allowing a completion percentage lower than Sauce Gardner and Tariq Woolen did in 2022. So that's a little interesting insight there. And then PFF had Devon Witherspoon at 13 targets, 5 receptions for 31 yards allowed, no touchdowns, 2 pass breakups and a passer rating of 46.6. And you can say, well, it was only Andy Dalton, blah, blah, blah. But you know what? Andy Dalton, for the most part, he looked all right. He did what he needed to do to get the Carolina.
He threw 58 times.
Yeah,
he threw the most times he's ever thrown in his career, and most of them were in Witherspoon's vicinity.
Absolutely, they were. So look, I know he's aging, but a legit receiver in Adam Thielen, who's been a very good receiver his entire career and had a fantastic game fantasy-wise against us. So he's not playing against scrubs either. He may well be this week with the Giants receiving core. So, I hope I haven't jinxed him for having his worst game against the worst receiving core there. But through the first two starts, I mean, do you know what I love just as much as his play? His energy, man. It's infectious on the field. And he feels like he should have been there in that Legion of Boom era because he fits in with that defense and that sort of characteristic and he's such a reminiscent in that week where the Legion of Boom were back and the Super Bowl team were back. It felt like I was watching a Legion of Boom player out there again. And my word is he, and like we're saying about Tariq Woolen coming back as well. And I said this off air before I bring you in, Pez, because I know you're itching to talk about this as well. I don't think we've ever had in my, certainly my tenure, but I might put it out there and say ever, when we get Tariq Woolen back, have we ever had two elite outside cornerbacks, true elite lockdown cornerbacks playing on the field together at the same time? Because yes, we had Sherman in the Legion of Boom days, but with all due respect, and these weren't bad corners either, but a Walter Thurman, a Byron Maxwell next to him on the outside, they're not elite.
Brandon
shutdown.
Brandon Browner,
yeah, but is he
Brandon
an elite?
Brandon Browner was a lot better than all of them. He didn't get enough better. Credit for what he did.
Better, but didn't was get he? He was better, but was he an elite shutdown, lockdown corner like Tariq is as well? And I'm saying, I would argue that Devin Witherspoon on the outside and Tariq on the outside is the best cornerback pairing Seattle might have ever had. I'm just going to put that out there early. It may be a bit of a controversial take, but I know you're itching to talk about him as well, Pez. So what are your thoughts on Witherspoon? And what was, again, like you said, I know Andy Dalton threw for the most times in his entire career, but a pretty sort of, not poor, but there were times where our pass defense was pretty poor again, and Witherspoon is shining in and amongst it. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, he's so good.
He is so
good. I said it off air, and I'll say it on air for the record. He's gonna be better than Tariq Woolen. He just is. Like, Tariq's up for the challenge. He'll help him raise his game. But I was the one who's concerned. No preseason at all. Chucked into the deep end, literally against the Lions. We lost terribly in the first game, and everyone had so much weight on his shoulders. And he didn't give it two shits in the Lions game. And that's a decent offense. The Panthers might not be as good, but two games and he's been targeted like a dog, because these teams know he's had no preseason. But teams, trust me, after he finishes with the Giants this week, the Bengals are going to start questioning, should we actually try to weak Tariq? Should we have Chase on Tariq instead of Witherspoon? Because he does everything. Run defense, pass defense. It's his energy. Like Julian Love looked like he just got a speed boost this game. Quandre, I listened to him on Bussing with the Boys podcast. He carried that injury into the game. So he very much picked and chose when he put the Jets on, because he didn't want to aggravate the hamstring too bad. But you're already seeing the infectious nature of him. And that is the biggest thing for me. That is the biggest thing. He is class. He takes a guy out. He went to go and grab a ball, what went over his hands, but then the receiver didn't get it. And he made out like he did everything. He was like, eh, come on. I was like, I love it.
He's fucking doing that thing where he stands there folding his arms like that. And he went,
honestly, I am tempted to stay up just to watch what Jamal Adams and Devin Witherspoon do to that Giants offense. Because them two together will be like headbutting each other, bloody G'ing each other up. Like, it's going to be chaos. It's going to be carnage. And
I mean,
it's like everyone. I know there's like the Legion of Boom there, and like there's a bit of incentive for everyone to play a little bit harder. But I don't even put it down to that. I genuinely, like I said before, and we spoke about before the season, his infectious nature for aggressive competing. You can already see it through two games. This whole defense looks like they're going on times two. Mm. Like the D line, Jaron Reed's like out of his fucking mind, like he's on speed. Like Jordan Brooks, they're just actually using him properly. They're sending him through on blitzes, and he's G'd up to death. Bobby's G'd up to death. Like, get Jamal back, mate. We're going times 10 against the Giants. fucking.
I mean, there are some unbelievably fiery characters coming back, like you say, with Tariq, Jamal, all these guys on that secondary. There's some unbelievable characters there. And I'm going to transition over to you, Mitch, with a point, with a just playing devil's advocate. I'm not saying this is going to happen. And obviously, you can have your say on Devon Witherspoon too. But on that, in terms of the amount of fiery characters, big outspoken characters that we've got on this defense, is there, I'm not saying this will happen, it's not saying this is what I think, but is there a chance that there could be too many fiery characters, too many outspoken voices on the defense that may do more harm than good? Just transitioning over to you, what are your thoughts on that, and what are your thoughts on Witherspoon?
It's a good question. Yeah, there's a lot of juice in there. There's a lot of outspoken characters, like you say, and there is quite a lot of ego. But I feel like those egos are kind of kept in check, and there's a lot of experience in there as well. I don't think. I mean, this is the NFL, right? You see, how many times do you see offenses and defenses tearing chunks out of each other in preseason? As soon as the contacts allow, they don't, you know, they're ripping chunks out of each other. You see scraps. That's so normal. So if there was to be an argument in the locker room between a couple of people, it wouldn't necessarily concern me, and it wouldn't really surprise me either. I think it's possible and probably even likely, but I don't think it's the kind of thing that would destabilize the team. Remember, this team are every rookie that comes in, every undrafted free agent is told the second they enter the building to compete on everything. Doesn't matter if it's a lunch break, game of table tennis, or, you know, a food fight when they're, you know, they're coming in for the breakfast. Everything's a competition when you enter that Seahawks building. So does it concern me? No. Would I be surprised? No. Would I want to watch it? Yes.
Yeah.
I definitely would want to watch it because I think there's some fire in there. But no, I think it works to our benefit more than it could ever hurt us. So I'm not concerned. With Witherspoon, sorry, I'll quickly just dip in and I'll come to you, Pez, after. One thing I highlighted with Witherspoon when we drafted him is the speed at which he sees the game. He always seems to be one step ahead of the receiver. He sees the game in slow motion. His instincts combined with that make him, you know, he never seems to be fully out of a play. And the speed at which he breaks on the ball is unbelievable. He's so twitchy. When the ball's already left the quarterback's hands, the wide receiver's in position, looks open, and he comes in flying out of nowhere to get a hand on it. He's so quick with that, the way that he breaks on the ball. It means that he's very unlikely to attract yellow flags for fouls in those instances, because the timing of him arriving at the wide receiver and making a play on the ball and the receiver, because he always leaves a bit on them, is always a split second of that ball arriving. How many times have you seen it? He's in there like Superman, man. He is a blur on your screen. He's not in the frame, getting a hand in. He is out of the frame. Ball's been thrown. He's in, you know, and that is Witherspoon all through college, all through what we've seen of him. He sees the game at a different speed to other people, and he is never out of never out of coverage. He's mm-hmm. always going to be able to get in there, and long may that continue, because Rika does the same thing. He gives space to receivers, makes them appear open, and uses his ability to break on the ball late to snipe. Mm-hmm. So loving that.
Yeah. Pez?
I just wanted to jump in with the whole too many personalities. There isn't, because there's only so what you're going to see here, if Jamal can stay healthy, you're going to see the new, if you want to compare, but I'm not comparing them in the talents, I'm comparing them as personalities, you're going to see the new Sherman Earl Thomas. Watch the Sound of the Boom doco series, whatever it was called, them two together. How did they G each other up? They're always in each other's faces. They're mm-hmm. always, you know, meh, meh. That is literally what Jamal and Spoon are going to do the whole game. They're just going to G each other up, and it's just going to infect everyone else. And do you know what? So fucking what? so what if the Eagles and they start scrapping? What was great about that, about our championship winning competitive team, was they used to fight.
They used to hold themselves accountable for everything.
And that's what, like, Witherspoon is going to be a sensation because he's doing it on the job. And except for a flea flicker and maybe a few, as it's shown in the stats, not that many, but maybe a few kind of beaten coverages. If he's doing that now in real game time, give him a bye week to just process. He is going to be sensational. Like, keep Jamal healthy. Fingers crossed Jamal can be healthy, because he stays healthy and reminds everyone what 9.5 sacks at safety looks like, with what our D-line is doing as productive as they are right now. And remember, when Jamal played his full year, he was one of our best run defenders. One of our best run defenders. Him and Bobby Wagner were our leading run defenders. Just everyone remember that. So we want him to be healthy. Sack what we paid for him, all that. Draft capital, bag of wank. Teams have proved it year in, year out. Get over yourselves. We want him fully healthy. We want 9.5 sacks Jamal back. G'd up to death. Witherspoon by his side. Then drag everyone in with him. Because Jay Reid's going to just buy into that. Nwosu's buying into it. You see, Nwosu started to get a bit of a chippy. Getting nice and chippy. Julian Love, he's getting nice and chippy. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. The base at the very start, our foundation of this defense, regardless of what the stats say, regardless of how we get burnt deep, is 10 times better than anything we've had in the last 6 years. We keep healthy, what we seem to be struggling doing, and this core group stays healthy, it's only going to get better. And I think the style of this defense is going to elevate people like Trey Brown, like Kobe Bryant, because they are just full on ready to buy into an aggressive, fast paced style of defense. Mm-hmm. We want to become bullies again in an age where you can't be a bully anymore because the refs just don't allow it. But we want to become bullies again. Bring the fucking flags on.
Yeah, I totally agree. You said chippy one too many times there. Now I'm hungry. Now I want a chippy, by the way. But other than that, yeah, I absolutely agree with you. I'm going to transition on to the linebackers because you talked a bit about them there. Bobby's obviously playing absolutely excellent. John Brooks, absolutely excellent. Again, like you say, I saw him blitzing through the line of scrimmage. I think he had about sort of 9 tackles combined. Brooks, Wagner was about 5 or 6. But
9 tackles combined, a sack, a tackle for loss, a QB hit. Jordan Brooks has come back from a major injury where I genuinely thought he'd lost his speed, and I was having little like shrines in my house with my jersey hanging up, praying for him. He's come back better.
He has.
He's come back better. And do you know who the key is? Sorry to just dive bomb into here because I'm so hyped the way he's come back. It's all because of Devin Bush.
Wow.
Spoken hero.
You jammy, but I was... Because my whole point for this segment was I was going to say it's not happening for Devin Bush yet. Because, like you say, I mentioned Jordan Brooks. You jumped in, which you're in your full right to do, because I know how much you love that man. And I thought, hang on, I'm not even getting to our point yet, but I'm letting him go because I'm going to bring in Devin Bush. And then you're saying that it's because of Devin Bush that Jordan Brooks is potentially looking... Okay, that's an interesting...
Jordan Brooks, like I said, Mitch, we spoke about it, didn't we? What he does great at college is seek and destroy. He's never been able to do that fully in this team. But now, I look at it, I'm saying Devin Bush, but it could be someone else. But there's a piece in that linebacking group that's come in that's freed Jordan up to play how he plays the best. I've not, like, in these first 3 games he's played, I've not seen him blitz so much since he's been here. And I'm just accrediting that to Bush might not be doing nice things, but he's clearly freed Jordan up to just go seek and destroy. Mitch.
Interesting.
You're the analytical guy. You can tell me if I'm right or wrong. Like, make some homework for us.
I've got my own take on our linebacker situation. And I genuinely think that when we see Jamal Adams play on Monday night, we're going to see him in a lot of different positions to what we're used to. And we didn't see much of him last year because he went out in the first game. But after he went last year, we saw other people put into Jamal Adams spaces to try and do Jamal Adams things, square pegs in a round hole. If Jamal Adams' role in the NFL is actually a round hole and he is a round peg, a lot of people will tell you he's been misused and he's an outlier in terms of that position as well. So we won't get into that now because that is a long debate. But having Jordan Brooks in a lot of blitz packages and rushing the passer, I think that might be a role we see Jamal Adams in some snaps as well. Because if you're trying to get him on the field and still keep the backfield loaded with talented DBs, sending Jordan Brooks or putting Jamal Adams in as a box safety and having him rush in the same scheme, I think that role might have been drawn up as a potential Jamal Adams hybrid role on some snaps as well. Because you could line up with one linebacker, people would be looking at it like, why is it only Bobby Wagner out there? But actually, if it's a passing down, you've got Jamal Adams rushing. And if it's a run play, Jamal Adams is as good as anyone getting sideline to sideline and stuffing runs or supporting in the middle. So I think that we might see Jamal Adams looking a bit like a linebacker on quite a few plays.
Good.
And also I will say this as well. I would sometimes if you're suspicious that it might be a throw and a passing down, I would prefer Jamal Adams dropping into coverage there than either of our two middle linebackers. So Jamal Adams in that position actually could be a better fit than Jordan Brooks. But I still think we'll see Jordan Brooks doing it. I just think he adds into that soup.
Well, like you say, naturally, being a defensive back, you would expect Adams to have better feel of pass coverage ability than a Brooks or a Wagner or anyone like that. So that's fair enough. Going on to the D-line. Two guys I want to give love to. Boye Mafe, one sack again. What a second year he's having. Like we all expected him to do on this podcast. He's proven us right. But how about Jaron Reed? Because for me, going back to what that season where he had like 9.5 sacks again, 9 sacks, double did, or was it 10 sacks, whatever. I can't remember Jaron Reed playing as well as that in one single game, maybe ever in a Seahawks. That for me, even though his tackles don't jump off the chart, four solo tackles, four assisted tackles, but 1.5 sacks, just his all-round play, he was involved in every single play, everything that was good on that D-line. Like, he took command of that D-line so well.
Have you got his full stats?
I haven't got his full stats.
2 sacks, well, my app's crediting 2 sacks, 1 tackle for loss, 3 quarterback hits, and 1 pass defense.
That's ridiculous.
Absolute psychopath.
Ridiculous. That man, like, full disclosure, fully admitting, you know, we can't hide when we broadcast these podcasts, they go on record. I said I wasn't totally convinced by the Jaron Reed signing when we were doing our free agency breakdown and stuff like that. I wasn't sure that he was the solution. It was he's a guy who knew the defense, but knows the team, blah, 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 blah. But is he really going to be a bolster and improve our interior defensive line, our run defense? I take it back. Through the first 3 weeks, Jaron Reed has been a monster. He's looking as good as he's ever looked. And that game this week against the Panthers, he just manhandled that offensive line and that interior of the offensive line. He was unbelievable. So I take it back, Jaron Reed. What a hell of a signing you're looking like, because he is, you're talking about this improved run defense. I look no further than Jaron Reed and Bobby Wagner at this moment in time, that the ones that are spearheading that for me.
I have a feeling I'm going to mention a name. I have a feeling I can see Mitch's face and he's itching here.
I'm ready. And I know what you're going to say.
Can I mention the name?
I know.
Well, yeah, I'll do the initials. Are you going to talk about an unspoken hero of the initials ME by any chance?
Yep. And we had our little back and forth on it. Thank you. Stage set.
It's me.
Curtains part. Okay, so me and Pez had a little thing but pre-season where Pez wasn't sure about Mario Edwards because he was a journeyman defensive lineman that had been around the league. And I think a lot of people had seen that as a potential weak spot as a starting player this year. And I said, and I don't want to go I told you so here, but it's a definite I told you so situation.
I'll do it.
Where basically I just said that I think he's a really good scheme fit for us. He's got a lot of experience. And if he does his job as well as I think he will, he'll allow other players to flourish on that defensive line. And last week, he was our highest rated defensive player on PFF with just under 91 rating. And he also had the most pressures on our team. So without filling up the box score with sacks and tackles for losses, he generated pressure, did his job, occupied his man, and allowed other people to fill up the box score with sacks and tackles for losses. So I feel like that is a really good scheme fit for us. I think without being a splashy player on our team, he is consistently doing a good job. And he's one player we've not mentioned in terms of injuries. So if he can stay fit and keep doing his job consistently, I think you'll see Jarran Reed get a lot of joy.
Do you know what's interesting as well is I just went through the stats then to see what he's accumulated. He's accumulated his two QB hits from the Panthers game and a tackle for loss in the Lions game. He didn't play or he didn't record a stat in the Rams game. Mm-hmm. And I think after the Rams game, our D-line was a lot better against the Lions and the Panthers. So, Mitch, you are right. You did tell me so, because how it is looking now is he is actually the silent X factor. And again, just to harp on to people who are a bit concerned about our defense, just think about when we had an elite defense, it wasn't because of who did what at the back. It's because of who did what at the front. Red Bryant, Clement, all the unspoken heroes. And we have, looking at these two games when he's played compared to the one he didn't, we might have a little secret X factor that no one's going to know, because he doesn't do anything much. He just does a lot. He's like Frank Clark for Jarran Reed, I think. And
he's just a good scheme fit. He's a handful at the line. He needs to be accounted for. And as soon as you force your opponents to match up 1v1 because Jarran Reed is a problem, because Mario Edwards is a handful for his guy, it means that whoever beats their man first is going to get to the quarterback. And I don't know how many Weetabix Jarran Reed had on that Sunday, but I need to know the number because it was unbelievable.
I think
He is looking like the 10 sack season Jarran Reed. He's come back with something to prove and with a massive chip on his shoulder. And if that's what he brings to the front, you add that to what Jamal and Spoon bring to the back.
Well, if you look at last year, we had such a punchy secondary that we were dreaming of being able to stop the run to force some throws into the backfield. We wanted to see more of it. We wanted to see a hurried quarterback forcing the ball into contested situations in our secondary. But instead, people were handing the ball off to the runner, and we couldn't deal with it. And they just kept marching the ball up the field against us doing that. This year, we're stopping the run and forcing teams into the air, and we're depleted in the secondary. And we all want to see Reek out there, against balls from rushed quarterbacks. So, and on the subject of rushing, we had the league's leading amount of pressures this week with 36. No one else got close to 36 pressures.
I love it.
Possibly because they had a quarterback throwing 58 times.
Yes.
And no one else in the league did.
Yes, but that could explain some of it. There is, however, as good as they were on that, there is, however, one aspect of this defense that I am concerned about. Nothing player-wise, individual player-wise, but this third down efficiency is not good enough for me. We still can't seem to get teams off the field in key third down situations. We extend offenses' drives way too long and keep our defense on the field way too long. In my opinion, a little nugget here from Brian Nemhauser, aka Hawk Blogger, better known as Hawk Blogger on Twitter. He says, "You think the Seahawks defense has been awful on third and long this season so far, which is 10 plus yards on third and long?" Then he says, "You would be right, as they're giving up a first down 46.2% of the time in those situations. That is 31st in the league. Forgive me, I don't know who the worst team is, but there is only one team that is doing that worse than the Seahawks." It's just a killer, man. It's a killer. You can't keep your defense out there for too long. You can have all these talented guys that we keep sort of waxing lyrical about on the podcast and in the Seahawks Twitterverse and stuff like that. But if you keep them on the field for too long, they're going to start burning out. They're going to start getting tired. As good as Witherspoon is, as good as Bobby is, as good as Reek is, all these players, you keep them on the field for too long, don't care who you're playing, it gets harder and harder and harder for them to keep maintaining that standard. And then you run the risk of more injuries and all this kind of stuff. I just wish, and like we said, whether it's a scheme thing, whether it's this soft coverage, prevent coverage, where we give teams far too easy first downs and allow them to extend drives by not being aggressive enough on third down. That's potentially my opinion. Well, no, it's not. It is my opinion. I'll say it like it is. It is my opinion. Yes.
I was just going to say, I've got 2 points to make on that. I do actually have, I mean, it's not going to surprise you if I say I've got a stat, but I've got a stat. It. So we gave up 400 yards against the Panthers. 60% of the yards we gave up from that 400, so I believe that's 240. So 240 of the 400 yards we gave up were on third down.
It's not good enough.
Which is crazy. And I was going to say something else about that as well. But no, I'll let it go to Pez if he's got something to say on that. I did have another stat, I'm sure I did. But,
go on, if you got another stat.
I was just going to say, yeah, I think the giving up so much on third downs is symptomatic of playing a bend but don't break style offense, because that is the mantra, but not having all of your playmakers in your secondary. If you're going to try to limit them and make them go long on these drives, you need someone to just go, nope, that's the end of your drive, because I've created a forced fumble, or because I've intercepted, or, you know, you need all of your guys that make those plays in there, because that's what you're stalling them to do. You're not just trying to let them score a touchdown really slowly. You're trying to stall them long enough for someone to make a play.
And maybe that is Jamal Adams when he comes back. Maybe, I don't know.
You got to remember, you remind me about something I really wanted to fucking rant about this defense.
Oh no.
I'll keep it short and sweet, because there's not really much. They're just shit. So there's not much to really go into with it. But I don't know if this game, yeah, we haven't been great for the first three games on third down. It is because of Pete Carroll's stupid prevent defense and his stupid soft bend, don't break, let him get these yards and that yards. And then when it gets into the crunch, like zones of the field and the yardage of the field, that's when our secondary becomes elite, but then we don't have any of our secondary weapons because we're playing with Mike Jackson, who I don't know what he's decided to do this season, but he literally lazes his ass around that fucking field, getting beat left, right and centre. He is awful. I am saying that as just a fan being annoyed, because I am not a professional footballer. So I don't really have the right to say that, but he is, from what I've seen, awful. The reason we got beat so many times in fucking third and long was that twat was just giving his guy 20 fucking yards and going, oh, I'll come and get you. Like, what was he doing? Head up his ass 24/7. Ever since preseason, ever since week three, he's not changed. He's not improved. He doesn't look like he gives a shit. It almost is like he's conceded to the fact that he's a rotational player and he's acting like a rotational player. Because he had an opportunity in this game to go, remember what I did last year. Remember what I can do. But he didn't. He's just like his half-assed attitude all I've seen pre-season to now. It's like he spat his dummy out because Witherspoon's come in and he's conceded to the fact that Witherspoon's better than me, so he's going to beat me out for my job, so I'm not going to give a shit. Him, Artie Burns, another one. you can't rely on guys like that. And then people go, but we got beat so badly on third down. Yes, it's going to happen because they're shite. Facts. Like, I'd love to see what a third down efficiency turns into when you have Spoon, Reek, Jamal, Diggs, Love, all our main guys on the field. Because that third down efficiency ain't going to be pretty when you've got Reek and Spoon on the outsides. It ain't going to be pretty for other teams. I'll tell you right now, that third down efficiency is going to get a lot better.
It needs to, and I hope you're right, mate.
It's fact. The first two game weeks, no one wanted to target Woolen. I said he looked a bit sluggish still, like getting beat on his routes and stuff, but no one likes throwing his way. So he has that cushion, he has that protection because of the aura of who he is, like Sauce Gardner, like Sherm. He looked a bit sluggish, but no one dares go his way because of his break speed. Well, what did he do? Oh, well, teams have targeted Witherspoon for two games straight and he's just battering everyone. I think, I honestly, when them two get back on the field, that third down efficiency is going to become a lot better because them big third and longs are going to be third and outs.
Good.
They're not going to be able to do what they've been doing. The Panthers won't be able to do what they did if it was Reek and Spoon. Facts.
Sing it with me, Mitch. Positive Pez. Positive Pez. What are you positive about this week?
Love it. Absolutely love it. Very good.
Oh, we transition into positive Pez.
Oh, yeah. I'm just saying it for...
Why not?
You know,
I'm just the Giants are going to get destroyed. And I mean, it's going to be both sides of the ball domination going into the bye week. Might be an outlier. Might be a bit like people like, oh, shit, are these Seahawks actually for real? We're going to get all our main guys back and we're going to put an absolute show. We love MetLife. We don't know how to not put a show on in MetLife. We're going to go in there and we're going to fucking destroy them. And we're going to destroy them with Ken and Charbonnet. I think both of them are going to be... Ken's going over 100, just what he does. Charbonnet's getting up there as well. I'm even going to call Charbonnet's first touchdowns coming in this game. 100%. JSN, I might be positive, but I'm not that positive. I'm still going to stick by my guns and say...
On that, Charles Cross likely to be back. And with Charles Cross likely to be back, possibly less 12 and 13 personnel.
Let's go, Mitch.
More JSN. I'd say more snaps for JSN. More situations for JSN.
JSN touchdown.
I'm actually going to join Positive Pez on his positive thing here. This is positive Mitch time. I'm going to say we establish the slot work with JSN. I think Gino was seeing how it's affecting JSN. He's going to try and get him involved early downs, establish that, get the run game going, defense condense, and we're going to see some Tyler deep balls as well. That's what I think we're going to see as well. I think we're going to see JSN become a problem to the extent they have to scheme for it. Then we hit Tyler, and I'm just going to love that complementary football that comes about from those situations.
How many touchdowns is JSN going to get, Mitch?
Three. About Pez on his own section. Love it.
Love it. Are you joining us, James? Are you going to put a downer on it?
Do you know what? This week, because I feel like you need it to like Pez, I'll join you. Tariq Woolen's coming back. I'm going to call it. First game back, he comes back with a bang. Picks off Daniel Jones. I'm not going to say pick six. I ain't going to go ecstasy level positive. But he's going to get a pick on his first game back. And do you know what? I have a really weird feeling that... I have a feeling Jordan Brooks might also get his first interception. I don't know why.
That's
I feel
a wild
like
one.
It is like a wild it, one, but I feel like... And there's a little bit of method to it because I feel like the Giants will abandon their plan of getting the ball to their receivers when Tariq and Devin Witherspoon are out there locking down their fucking basket case receivers. So I think this is the game that they'll try and get the ball to Darren Waller, knowing our kind of maybe potential weakness covering tight ends across the middle of the field with this soft defense. However, I think I feel like this is Jordan's game with how electric he's looked at the start of the season, where he'll jump a route to Darren Waller and he'll get his first pick. That's my two. My only, do you know, no, I'm not going to say it because that's a negative and I'll get told off.
I was
going to mention
keep it positive,
maybe,
keep it high. Keep it, yeah. Don't mention it. All right,
I'm not going to mention it in the negative.
We'll leave the pick six for Spoon as well.
Pick six for Spoon. Fuck you, hell. We'll still find a way to lose this game. But I'm joking, aren't I?
I'm shocked.
I'm joking.
Jason, three touchdowns. Charbonnet, a touchdown.
Yeah, but we're Seahawks, aren't we?
It's complimentary to two. How much are the Giants planning to score? We're on 60. We're matching the Dolphins this week. We're going old school. Cardinal shutout, 54 bloody points.
That was
with Pete Carroll as well, so it can be done.
It can be done. I'm fully on the positive train, so I'm not gonna be negative James tonight this week. I'm not gonna do it. Tariq's back, and the David Attenborough gif will be back this week in our Discords and our WhatsApp if he does get a pick. Were you aware of what that is, Mitch?
Aware of what, sorry?
Oh, I don't think he's seen the Attenborough pick.
Has he not seen the Attenborough gif?
No.
I have a bit of a tradition.
I have a bit of a tradition
when Tariq Woolen gets a pick. I put a nice little gif of David Attenborough extending, sort of, well, making the gesture ways, you know, having a nice time, to put it that way, if you know what I mean. He's polishing the lamppost. I don't know. Without saying what he's actually doing, to keep it PG, even though we're not a PG podcast, that's what he's doing. So if he gets one,
into this segment, love it.
Yeah, it's a bit of a podcast tradition. Anyway,
we've definitely just gone wildly off on a tangent here. we've not even finished a pod and we've just finished a pod.
Yeah, we talk tangents. That's what we do. Anyway, listen, Giants 3-1. It's going to happen. We're going to get our predictions right going into the bye. We are going to be 3-1. We're manifesting it. But listen. Thank you to all of you, as always, for tuning in with us. We know, believe you me, we know we talk shite and you don't have to tune in with us every week. But to those of you that do and keep coming back, you subscribe to us. We love yous all, whether you get us through the audio waves or through YouTube. We don't care how you listen or watch us. We're going to have some interesting things coming up in the next few weeks as well that we're going to get into. Very soon, potentially starting this week as well. A new little partnership that we're very excited that you'll find out more about when it drops. But yeah, other than that, you can follow us, as always, on our social media accounts, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter. Just search We Talk Seahawks. We will be there and waiting to receive your follow. We have a Discord, which is the pinned tweet or pinned X, whatever it's called now, on our Twitter. The link is there. Feel free to join. It's a nice little small community. I'm doing your job here, Pez. You go and have a lie down, son. Sleep like a log tonight, you.
No time for bed.
I know. It's a nice little community. It's full of fun, full of just Seahawks fans that just like talking shit like we do. But you don't get shot down for your opinion. Unless you're saying Tariq Woolen's shite, then I will be shooting down your opinion. But I'm sure you won't be. It's a really fun little place to talk Seahawks, and we do have a laugh in there. So please do feel free and join if you're not already joined. We're going to have a rookie watch coming out this week as well, where we're going to talk more about our rookie performers from this week and looking forward towards the Giants game. So that's going to be fun as always with the main man, Mitch, at the helm. And like I say, we've got our new partnership coming up this week or in the next week as well at some point. That's going to be fun as well. Add a new element to our podcast and our show, branching into maybe a new sector of the world of football that we haven't sort of tapped into yet, which will be a lot of fun that we're all looking forward to. But for now, we'll be back to talk about the Giants game. Whatever happens, win, lose or tie, whatever happens, whatever unique Seahawks way we find of winning a game or losing a game, we'll be back to talk about it. But it's winning a game because it's positives this week. So we'll be back to talk about a Seahawks win over the Giants, and we'll go 3-1 into our bye week. But until then, stay safe, stay tuned, and as always, go Hawks.
Go Hawks. Go Hawks. Hawks.